Welcome everyone to Peyto's fourth quarter and year-end 2014 results conference call. Despite what the commodity prices are doing outside, we're here to talk first and foremost about 2014 before we get on to some more forward-looking. For us, 2014 was an outstanding year. I first want to throw a big shout-out to the Peyto team for such a great job that they did last year. Despite where oil prices are, you're going to have to excuse us, but we're going to be pretty upbeat today because we're talking about a pretty spectacular year that we just had. In the room with me today, we've got the whole Peyto management team, now expanded. That consists of Scott Robinson, our Chief Operating Officer, Kathy Turgeon, our CFO, Dave Thomas, our VP Exploration, JP Lachance, our VP Exploitation, Tim Louie, our VP of Land, and our two newest members, Lee Curran, our VP of Drilling and Completions, and Todd Burdick, our VP of Production. Then, of course, we've also got Jim Grant, our Investor Awareness Rep. Jim, and I see you got a big list of questions, so why don't you take it from here?
Okay, for those of you who are new to our conference calls, we hold the first half as a question and answer session where I ask some of the senior management questions about Peyto and its latest financials before we turn the call over to questions from investors and representatives of investment businesses. Darren, I count a record number of new records being set on the first page of our 2014 year-end news release. This looks like growth in all aspects of our business. What message about our growth do you want to share with our investors?
You know, Jim, we talk a lot about our growth, but I think the bigger message that we need to reinforce is that the growth is a byproduct of us having very profitable investments in 2014. That's the ultimate goal around here. We're not just interested in being a bigger company. I think everybody in this room would agree that they don't want to just manage more people and manage a bigger asset base. We're looking for maximum amounts of profit. And we can generate that in one of two ways, really. We can either deploy more capital for the same returns, which is how we did it really in 2014. We had our largest capital program ever at $690 million, and we achieved very similar returns on that capital, 26% to what we got in 2013, which was around 27%. Or I suppose we could deploy less capital and get even better returns to generate the same amount of profit. And really, that's something that we're looking at for 2015, using probably even lower capital spending, but at the end of the day, getting more work done, more activity done, and even better returns on it because the costs that we're gonna see in 2015 are gonna be less. So regardless of the growth ends up being this byproduct of us doing a very good job investing capital. It's the profitability that I'd want to highlight first and foremost for shareholders. I think that's the biggest accomplishment in 2014.
Okay. Turning to Todd Burdick, our VP of Production, one of the two newest members of our management team, but a member of the Peyto team since 2004. Todd, can you provide us with a summary of the areas and facilities that contributed to our production growth from 75,000 barrels of oil a day equivalent in the beginning of 2014 to over 85,000 at the end of the year?
Yep. Thanks, Jim. 2014 was our busiest year in terms of facility processing and compressor additions. In the Greater Sundance area, we added seven compressors and one 50 million a day refrigeration train. And in Brazeau, we added two compressors and one 30 million cubic foot a day refrigeration train. Net to Peyto, that positioned us to have about 5,000 to 10,000 BOE a day of growth room coming into 2015. We added 41,500 BOE a day of new production over the year. All of this growth occurred in Greater Sundance, about 38,000 BOE a day, with the remainder about 3,500 BOE a day in the Brazeau area. Combined with the base product production, we exited the year at 85,700 BOE a day.
Todd, can you also update us on production for 2015, including the impact of such things as TransCanada's transmission pipeline outages and the impact of low liquids prices?
Yeah. Jim, our production for the first couple of months of 2015 has been impacted by two issues that are outside of our control. TCPL, the province's main gas carrier, have had ongoing capacity restrictions, which have caused producers north of Rocky Mountain House to curtail production below their previous norms. In our case, we've experienced and will continue to experience for the balance of the quarter reductions in our volumes because of that situation. To date, these curtailments have reduced our production by approximately 775 BOE a day. The curtailment relates to compressor maintenance and line integrity investigations. There are periodic interruptions on the horizon through the summer months, but we don't expect the same impact as system volumes decline as draws from Alberta storage come off the system. The liquid pricing situation has also affected us for these first 2 months of production in 2015. As a result of tremendous supply growth, we saw the base price for propane plunge from $89 a barrel Canadian FOB Edmonton for January of 2014 to $7.42 a barrel for January 2015. When we consider the deduction for transportation and fractionation, which ranges from $3 to $10 across our properties, the recovery of liquid propane has become largely uneconomic. We have been seeing improvements in late February and March as supply corrects, but we made the decision to reduce propane recoveries at our plants from normal levels of 26% to a recent level of 19% overall. By leaving some of the propane in the gas stream, we have maximized the profit for this small part of our production stream, but there has been an impact to our production of 550 BOE a day based on the 6-to-1 energy equivalency factor calculation. Now, while there have been these inverse impacts to our realized production, the total of about 1,300 BOE a day, it's important to note that none of this relates to the resources we're producing. On the contrary, our 2014 wells have been performing very well, and we've added some additional very strong producers through our Q1 activity to date. And as the TCPL problems resolve and NGL prices come back to where they should be, it will reflect in our production numbers.
Okay, thanks. My next question is for Lee Curran, the second new member of our management team as our Vice President of Drilling and Completions. Lee also brings substantial experience from his many years on the Peyto team. Lee, can you speak to the record level of drilling and completion activity we saw in 2014? What milestones would you highlight and key accomplishments can you reflect on that will take us forward into 2015 and beyond?
Sure, Jim. In 2014, Peyto spudded a gross well count of 123 wells, utilizing a fleet of 9 drilling rigs. Although we've seen short periods of similar activity levels in prior years, during 2014, we were able to maintain continuous operations with that fleet, including an active drilling program through the traditional breakup period on 7 of these 9 rigs. Now, a typical operator in the Deep Basin may achieve 225 to 250 operating days per rig in a given year. However, much of our fleet realized in excess of 320 operating days per rig. As a result, we were able to conduct an 11 to 12 equivalent rig program with only 9 rigs. Now, this means of accomplishing more with less resources lends to greater efficiencies. In the Greater Sundance area, we continue to realize gains not only in our averages, but also in our pace setter operations. In 2014, we realized our fastest drill times of 14 days from spud to rig release in both our horizontal Wilrich and Falher categories. Our most notable performance gains, perhaps, have been realized in our expansion areas of Brazeau. We have drilled a total of 21 wells to date there, and early in the development of that area, borehole instability associated with the Manville coals presented us with significant challenges. However, late 2014 and early into 2015, we have overcome those with significant performance improvements. To provide some color on this, through 2013, our initial 5 wells drilled averaged 35 days at a cost of $3.9 million. Our most recent 5 wells through late 2014 and early 2015 have averaged less than 23 days at approximately $2.8 million drilled and cased. Furthermore, the most recent 2 of these wells were drilled and cased at a cost of less than $2.4 million each. We are very encouraged that we have begun to realize Sundance-type performance cost structure in this area, and that'll further strengthen our economic returns. We frequently measure our operational execution both internally and externally, and we continually find our nearest competitor to be ourselves in a prior year. Looking to the remainder of 2015 and beyond, we will continue to strive for performance advancements that will maintain our position as the supply cost leader in the Deep Basin.
Thank you, Lee. Turning to our Chief Operations Officer and VP of Operations, Scott Robinson, with record activity levels in every aspect of our operations in 2014, how are we managing to keep the capital and operating efficiencies we see in our 2014 year-end results as we grow at such a rapid pace?
That's a good question, Jim. I think a lot of people ask that question. We amaze ourselves year over year, but I think it's really all about our focus and the workplace culture that we have here at Peyto. We enjoy most of the same organizational attributes that we had 10 years ago. Yes, we've expanded the team slightly to handle the increased volume of work that this expansion has brought about. We've maintained the organization as a very flat organization. Each team member has a lot of authority and responsibility. There's very little overlap in work activities, and the communication level amongst our individuals is strong, but it's not burdensome. The greatest portion, I think, of every team member's day is spent doing productive work. I think sometimes it's not always what you do, but it's sometimes what you purposely don't do, and we try to keep our business simple and ensure that the work that we're doing is working towards positive outcomes, and we try to minimize any kind of time-wasting activity. So we've maintained that culture through the years, and it's allowed us to achieve what we're doing. When you combine that discipline with the discipline as a group to hold to our strategies and stick to the geographical areas that our resources fall in and where our expertise lies, you know, and we layer on top of that the team's continual quest to, as Lee mentioned, to improve our execution, we're rewarded with these consistent outcomes year over year. And this approach has put us at the front of the pack, certainly in the Deep Basin and in the industry in general, in terms of total cost performance, and that's not a position that we're apt to give up.
Thanks, Scott. Turning to our VP of Land, Tim Louie, can you give us a summary of our land acquisitions in 2014 and a general indication of where those new lands are located?
Thanks, Jim. Last year, we acquired 38 sections at Alberta Crown Land Sales. We also did a minor asset acquisition involving an additional 6 sections. So in total, we spent $12.9 million, or less than 2% of our capital budget, to acquire 44 sections. With respect to where these new lands are located, about 60% of these new additions are situated within our Greater Sundance and Brazeau areas. The rest of our 2014 acquisitions are positioned between these two areas. And it is worth mentioning that we will continue to focus our acquisition efforts on lands that contain the stacked Cretaceous targets that we routinely exploit.
Okay, thanks, Tim. Turning to our CFO and VP of Finance, Kathy Turgeon. Kathy, one aspect of our business that is a little different than most of our peers of our size who grow by acquisition are our tax pools. Can you describe where they are at the end of 2014 and how do we manage to continue to generate these pools?
Well, as outlined in our MD&A, our tax pools at the end of 2014 totaled $1.5 billion, which are comprised of $800 million of CDE, $385 million of CCA, $232 million of COGP, and $86 million of CEE, and the balance consists of share issue costs and cumulative eligible capital. As wells are drilled and completed, we generate CDE and CEE pools. Facilities, pipelines, well equipment, etc. generate CCA pools. Property acquisitions generate COGP and CCA if tangible assets are acquired. The majority of our pools, D and CCA, give us a tax write-off rate of 25 to 30% per year. If we grew primarily by acquisition of property, we would have mostly COGP pools, which are limited to 10% write-off per year. As you can see, an organic growth strategy is better from a tax perspective. Corporate acquisitions can preserve the nature of tax pools. However, acquired pools are successored and therefore the tax claim can be limited. In addition, pools acquired through corporate acquisitions come with the risk of CRA audit and reassessment.
Thanks, Kathy. Turning to J.P. Lachance, our VP of Exploitation. J.P., in the 2014 year-end news release, we mentioned that our 2014 capital program is forecast to deliver a before-tax internal rate of return of 26%. How do we come up with that prediction, and what is the breakdown by well species?
Jim, as an industry, we often talk about capital efficiencies like final and developing costs or dollars spent at a flowing BOE, but that alone does not necessarily mean the wells we're drilling are profitable. At Peyto, we like to look at the prior year's drilling program and calculate the rate of return as Darren alluded in his opener there, using the actual capital spent compared to the cash flow those wells have generated to date and their forecasted cash flows from the reserves assigned. Now, we don't just include the drill, complete, and tie-in costs per well, but also the non-associated well capital like land, seismic, and facilities we constructed during the year. We also include the costs of any sidetracks or operational problems that a well experienced. So naturally, when we look at well-by-well results, we get a wide variety of outcomes, but as a whole, we calculated a 26% before-tax internal rate of return for the wells added last year based on insights, reserve assignments, and forecasted prices. Now, if we look at the breakdown of the predicted returns on our well-rich program as a whole yield about 23% return, while the flares fall between 25 to 27%, the non-acumen program at 31%, and the blue sky at 21%. With continued improvements in our cost structure, we expect to see similar or better returns for our 2015 program, even in this low price environment.
Thank you, JP. Turning to Dave Thomas, our VP of Exploration, over the last year, we grew reserves, and included in that growth was a corresponding growth of our drilling inventory. Beyond what is recognized by our independent reserves report produced by Insight Petroleum Consultants, we have a much larger internal inventory of drilling prospects that also grew substantially over the last year. Could you characterize both both inventories for us and comment on the geographic and geological inventory distribution?
Yes, Jim. Every year our independent reserves report lists the number of undrilled locations which reserves are booked to. These undrilled locations are in the proven, undeveloped, and probable additional categories. And in most cases, this booked inventory consists of typically either infill drilling locations or 1 mile step out locations. Now, in addition to these independently identified locations between or right beside existing productive wells, Peyto also has a larger inventory of internally identified drilling locations that are based on geological or seismic mapping. Now, at the end of 2014, even though Peyto had drilled 123 gross horizontal wells during the year, the number of remaining booked horizontal locations had still risen 19% to 747 from 628. Of these 747 booked horizontal locations, 550 of them are in the key Nanakune, Falher, Wilrich, and Blue Sky zones, which have been the foundation of our growth these past few years. And in addition to this booked inventory, the number of Peyto internally identified horizontal drilling locations also increased from 1,163 to 1,237. Of these locations, 603 are in the key Nanakune, Falher, Wilrich, and Blue Sky zones. So at the end of 2014, the booked and internally identified inventories combined to yield a total of 1,984 horizontal locations, of which 1,153 horizontal locations are in those key Nanakune, Falher, Wilrich, and Blue Sky zones. That's a pretty healthy inventory in relation to Peyto's level of drilling activity. Geographically, the new additions were pretty evenly distributed in the greater Sundance, Ansel, and Brazeau areas. So really, Jim, the important point here is that although Peyto has had a very active drilling program in 2014, we continue to add new drilling locations at a faster pace than they were drilled.
Thank you, Dave.
Scott, in some previous years, we worked more aggressively through the breakup period, and in others, less so. Can you speak to how you see this year's activity through the traditional breakup period?
Yeah, Jim, as Lee's pointed out quite astutely in the past, the opportunity to keep our operations going, even during some of the tough access periods during breakup, really provides a benefit to our business in terms of overall efficiency and resulting cost performance. It's best to keep going while you've got the momentum rather than to stop and endure the difficulties of restarting after a breakup. So we've learned from that. It also provides for smoother operations in terms of wells feeding into our facilities. So through this past experience, the past couple of years, we've made the decision to undertake a reasonable level of sensible drilling activity during breakup, as costs allow. Lee and his group are very busy right now and have been busy preparing for this upcoming breakup, and I'll let him tell you a little bit more about that.
Thanks, Scott. As previously mentioned, we were fortunate last year to conduct continuous operations on 7 drilling rigs and 4 active completion spreads throughout the breakup interval. We're presently hosting discussions with road owners in our areas and taking steps towards a spring breakup program this year, should we experience similar favorable conditions as those we saw in 2014. Now, should conditions deteriorate such that continued operations through breakup become unrealistic, we will be well positioned with project inventories and applicable resources to aggressively execute these projects in the second half of the year.
Lee, our largest expenditures are the capital to drill and complete our wells. Right now, with the drilling activity in Canada at an all-time low, what has happened to the pricing we are getting from our suppliers of drilling and completion services and materials?
Sure, Jim. You know, that's a hot topic right now. Peyto's contracting strategies have long proven successful, and this is really just an extension of what we've always done. We endeavor to employ contractors that take pride in providing quality products and services. We have historically been able to offer very high utilization relative to our peers, and for that we've yielded preferential pricing arrangements, even through busier market conditions than what the industry is experiencing today. Our suite of suppliers has and continues to be responsive to the current environment. Our largest single elements in well construction are pumping services, drilling rigs, and tubular goods. Now, we've seen significant reductions in the first two categories and pending reductions in the third category as we deplete our committed inventories. To date, we have realized approximately 10% drilling and completion cost reductions solely on the basis of service cost reductions. As mentioned, a large component of this has been borne by reductions in pumping services and drilling rig day rates. However, we continue to have regular and candid rate discussions with all of our service providers. Should these low activity levels persist, our suppliers will undoubtedly be successful in negotiating improved labor and supply costs from their respective vendors and further allowing discounts to be passed along to us.
Thank you, Lee. JP, beyond the pricing reductions that Lee just mentioned, what technical changes to our completion design are we contemplating that will have an impact on our well costs as we continue to drill in this low price environment?
Jim, some of the completion design aspects we're already experimenting with include the amount of energizing fluid we're using on our fracs, sand types and quantities, the amount of chemical additives we use for our fracs, and recycling of flowback water. There's nothing new here, but we look at these things in the past before, but when the price environment is such that as it is, you know, everything's on the table. So, of course, we need to evaluate both the short and long-term effects of well performance with these trials, but early results are encouraging, showing no negative impacts on performance and could lead to sustained completion cost savings of about $100,000 to $200,000 per well beyond those reductions that Lee mentioned. And all this is to ensure we continue to add value with the wells we drill and keep those returns at levels we've grown accustomed to. Again, at this low price environment.
Thank you, JP. Darren, you wrote in the 2014 year-end results news release that Peyto was eager to take advantage of the current environment of uncertainty, in effect being greedy when others are fearful. Can you elaborate both on how you view the current uncertainty in the energy market and how we will be able to take advantage of it?
Sure, Jim. You know, we've said it before, and we'll say it again, that Peyto tries to be very countercyclical. In our business approach, you know, quoting Warren Buffett, we want to be greedy when others are fearful, and I think very much so we want to be fearful when others are greedy. It applies particularly well to the oil and gas industry because it tends to be a cyclical commodity business, and there's a lot of boom and bust in the industry, and if we can get off cycle with it, I think we can do very well. As these guys have talked about, you know, there is some benefits obviously to continuous operations. We are seeing a lot of other operators cut their capital programs. As a result, costs are falling. That's when we want to be particularly active. We want to take advantage of those low costs because we know that that has a positive effect on our returns. If you look at a simple cash flow analysis and a simple returns analysis, capital is at the front end. It's undiscounted. And so if you can get a reduction in the capital, that's a direct improvement in your returns. And usually, yeah, it comes because we've got short-term softness in commodity prices, but that typically isn't going to be soft like that over the life of the asset, but the capital is crystallized once you've spent it. It's at the start, at the very front end. And So, you know, if we can be busy either with deployment of capital in drilling wells and completing wells and tying wells in or buying facilities or even buying land, you know, as Tim mentioned, you know, last year's land purchases were, I think, over twice what we spent in 2012, for instance, when gas price was soft. So here again, we're looking at another year where commodity prices are soft, activity levels are down, probably be very little competition for land, and the prices will be way down. That's a perfect time for us to pick up drilling inventory too. So, you know, we want to be greedy right now. That's, I know that maybe that sounds bad, but from a shareholder perspective, that's when we can maximize the returns, generate the best returns. We want to put as much capital to work in this environment as we possibly can.
Okay, thank you, Darren. Mary, I'd like to turn the call over now to questions from investors and representatives of investment businesses.
The first question is from Rachel Eddy from First Energy. Please go ahead.
Good morning. I had a quick question about your previously announced 2015 outlook. You guys had formally announced a capital budget in between $700 to $750 million. However, when I look at your prezo on the website, you make reference to approximately potential savings of upwards of 20% and then a $600 million budget for 2015. Is this a targeted budget range, and when would you look to formally discuss a revised budget?
Yeah, Rachel, it's tough this year because it's very much a bit of a moving target, right? The activity that we planned out in the fall and that we laid out, we're going to attempt to do. Assuming obviously weather cooperates and we can drill through breakup as we did last year, we're going to try and accomplish what we originally set out to do this year. And that is an aggressive, you know, more wells than we drilled even in 2014. The challenge, of course, though, is that because the costs are changing so dramatically, you know, what's that going to cost us? You know, last year when we set that budget in motion, we had 2014 costs and we had good historical idea of what wells are going to cost and what that capital program was going to ultimately cost us. Then, you know, service costs started changing dramatically. And so we expect over the year that we can achieve that same amount of activity for hopefully 20% less than that 700 to 750 million range. Now, as Lee talked about, we've got 10% already in pocket. We should see some more savings, hopefully, even as we drill into breakup. And beyond breakup, you know, the activity levels are very uncertain right now. There could be even less activity than is currently projected. Rigs could stay shut down. Competition for services gets even greater, and we could see even additional savings. Now, the one other piece that we do have, changed from that original budget is that we don't have to be as aggressive ordering up new facilities with as much lead time. Fab shops are not quite as busy anymore. We don't have to get gear on the road 9 months in advance anymore. So we can actually delay ordering some of the equipment that we foresee needing into the future, probably outside of 2015. So we get a one-time reduction in facility costs probably for this year as we tighten up that timeline a little bit. You know, as I talked about, it's a little bit of a tough thing to pin down exactly what well costs are going to be when they're changing so dramatically. I think as we get into breakup and start to see beyond breakup and the levels of activity for the summer, we should be able to come out with a more firm revision to what the capital program is going to ultimately cost us. And I'm hopeful, and I think we're all quite optimistic that we can get up to that 20% savings number.
The next question is from Kevin Kaiser from Hedgeye. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning. You mentioned in the prepared remarks there that you've seen some strong well results in the 2015 year to date. Can you just give some more color, what areas, what targets, and then any detail on those results?
Sure, Kevin. Thanks for the question. I'm going to pass it off to JP. He probably knows some of those individual wells off by heart.
Yeah, we don't typically get into specific wells. I mean, it's early days, but what we're seeing on average from our 2015 program is we're slightly ahead of the curve of our average for 2014 for the group of wells. I mean, as far as specifics go, you know, we've had some good results in our in wells down in our an area we call Pedley. We've had some other good results right in the heart of Sundance and some other areas in Ansel. So really all across the board there, without getting into too many specifics, Kevin.
Okay, and then you said that you were testing some new completion designs, just tweaking some things that will result in additional cost savings. What are you doing differently?
we've experimented, we already have some data in the past about sand types that we're using, just different types of sand and changing up a bit of the recipe. We haven't fundamentally changed our design as far as what we do, but these small changes have an impact, and it's all about getting those costs down, and so far so good. We're seeing not a detrimental effect in the short term. We don't know if that will affect us in the long term, and that's important to understand. So at this point, it's mainly the sand, some nitrogen. We talked about energizing fluids. We've backed off a little bit in some areas. But this is not a recipe we can apply to every formation in all areas, so we're being selective in that regard.
Okay, great. And then last one, how is the steep decline in liquids prices in the last 5 or 6 months here, how has that shifted your focus in terms of the targets that you're going to go after? Are you moving more to deeper gas zones?
I think, Kevin, we already had. Mm-hmm. When we had looked at a comparative analysis between the more liquids-rich formations prior and the drier gas formations, when gas prices got really soft down into that $2 range and we still had $100 liquid prices, clearly the formations that had more liquids production were the ones that were offering better returns. But when gas gets back up to about $3, even at $100 liquid prices, the drier gas formations, because they're more productive and sometimes actually tend to be cheaper to go get, even though they're deeper, they were offering us the better returns. Now you've got liquids prices much lower, and as Todd pointed out, propane prices that are pretty much at zero in terms of what we're getting here in the first month of the year. So we had to obviously warm up the plants and reject propane. But I think the deeper dry gas formations now are still winning the day in terms of capital allocation. As Dave talked about, the bulk of our inventory as we look forward into the future, both booked and unbooked, is from those deeper, drier formations. So, it's kind of funny because the industry had moved quite aggressively into very liquids-rich gas production because they didn't have a cost structure that worked with dry gas. And at the same time, here we are at Peyto moving the opposite direction into drier gas formations because we've got an advantaged cost structure that makes those dry gas formations profitable. So, and then we lose the liquids price, and who's worse off? Well, clearly the guys that have moved all of their resource into the liquids-rich formations are struggling, and we're sitting just fine with dry gas again.
The following question is from Faye Lee from Odlum Brown. Please go ahead.
Hi, Darren. Just have a question. I understand your strategy on wanting to drill, when costs are declining or in this type of slow environment. But given the high decline rates associated with horizontal drilling, is there a point where you would kind of say, okay, even though costs are lower, I'm just better off waiting? And because of the high decline rates?
Well, I think ideally, we'd want to deploy the capital when the capital is cheapest and produce the gas when the prices are highest. The challenge, of course, is trying to predict both of those. So you can really, I think, get yourself in a pickle if you spend the capital today thinking this is the cheapest, and then you're waiting and waiting to bring on production for the commodity price to recover. What if it doesn't? So I think that probably the best way to approach it is run your economics as if the price doesn't recover, and are you still deploying capital in a profitable way? And so we tend to do that as well. We of course run economics on the strip, but at the same time we do a double check to see, if you held commodity prices flat at this low level, are we still seeing reasonable returns on the capital that we're deploying? So, we know though that when industry pulls back like this, when activity drops way off, that there tends to be a production response ultimately, and that tends to drive a supply or a price response. So you just know, because of the cyclicality of the commodity, that when we're in a low like we are, when there's no activity happening, when the cost of services is really low, and this is when we want to deploy capital, that you're likely to see a commodity price response down the road. How long that takes, we don't know. We can't predict that into the future, but we protect ourselves obviously with a active hedging program that smooths out some of that volatility, and also with a cost base that's so incredibly low that we're still making a profitable investment decision even if commodity prices stay where they are.
Okay, great, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. There are no further questions registered at this time. I would now like to turn the meeting back over to Mr. G.
Great. Well, thank you very much. As I said, we had a fantastic year last year, and that was due to a lot of hard work by this Peyto team. As Scott mentioned, it's a small team with a bit of a unique culture for sure. I think it was the one part of our business that didn't grow very much. In fact, I think we added one person last year and grew from 47 to 48 people at Peyto, but we're all still very consolidated on one floor, just like our asset base is consolidated in the Deep Basin. And we're looking for another exciting year in 2015. A little bumpy to start off, of course, as Todd mentioned, but you know, I think the year is going to prove one of the great ones when we look back on it. You know, 2012, when we look back, was a year of very soft gas prices, and we did some spectacular stuff that year too, including making our only acquisition. So who knows what holds ultimately for 2015, but we've got some big plans at the drill bit to start off with, and then we'll see what comes. But stay tuned as we progress through the year, and we'll be back to you with Q1 release in May. Thanks for listening.